Larry, so nice to have you back.
It's Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Let's start with the case of Pavel Durov and the owner of Telegram. How do you find this case, and what's the reason behind his arrest?
Well, I think the ultimate reason, despite the ones he's charged with, is that he won't play ball with the West in terms of censoring certain content. And we're not talking about content that deals with pedophilia or with violence, gratuitous violence. We're talking about the fact his platform has been used by people opposed to the U.S. Support for Ukraine, who have supported Russia's response with respect to Ukraine and NATO. His platform has really told the story of the Palestinians and the genocide that the Israelis have been committing. That's allowed to be aired on Telegram. And then, just a variety of other foreign policy issues. So I've heard some say, oh, this was the Western intelligence wanted him to give them a back door so that they could hack into what was going on. I think that's just so much nonsense, because the Western intelligence agencies already are hacking in. I mean, God almighty, it must have been 15 years ago when I was involved with a U.S. military exercise. And we were in a portion of this control group that it was all top secret clearances, but there was another group that was off in another room who were doing what are called computer network operations. And they literally back then had the ability, this is 15 years ago, they were already had the ability to penetrate a computer, a smart TV, a cell phone, even if it was turned off. There were ways that they were able to go in and spy and penetrate. And the same applies for these social media applications, whether we're talking, Proton Mail, then in this case, Telegram, Instagram, whatever gram you want to put up there, they're penetrating it. So this wasn't about Pavel not playing ball with him on that front. Then one of the other charges that was listed accused him of basically refused to put a wiretap on somebody that some quote law enforcement organization wanted. Well, the only country I'm aware of in the world where they have a constitution with a Bill of Rights that prescribes what the government can do to you in terms of listening in on your conversations is in the United States. So that means this was a U.S. They're charging him over something he refused to do for the United States. I don't even know how that holds up in a French court. So even though he's got 12 charges facing him, he's supposed to report into a judge every 2 weeks. If I was him, I'd get the hell out of France and basically tell the West to go screw itself. The West has become an authoritarian, dictadura. Is becoming that. I mean, hell, look what's going on in Brazil. Brazil's going to ban Twitter. So, I'm tired of all of these authoritarian thugs around the world that like to masquerade as Democrats, but they can't wait to start censoring and sanctioning points of view that they just don't agree with.
Yeah. Larry, how do you see the situation right now in Ukraine? We've learned that due to this F-16 crash, Zelensky has dismissed the commander of the Ukrainian Air Force. And
well, I hadn't heard that. That's new today, huh?
Yeah, it is.
This is hilarious. So we've got several possible explanations. Now, I'll be up. the Ukrainians are now saying that this was this F-16, which they just got from the United States with their brand new pilot who was trained, I guess, by the Dutch and the Netherlands, maybe in the United States for some period of time, where he was shot down by a Patriot missile battery that the United States gave the Ukrainians. So basically, the Ukrainians killed their own pilot. Woohoo, way to go, guys. So now Zelensky gets to go back to Washington and say, hey, I need pilot, I need F-16, I need Patriot missile, huh? Give it to me, please. So he's blaming the Air Force guy. Air Force guy, last I checked, probably wasn't running the air defense system. It's even questionable whether that's the real story. Maybe they don't want to admit that the Russians actually had located the hangar where the aircraft was. The pilot was rushing to get into the plane to take off to go defeat Soviet missiles, and whammo, took him out. Or that maybe he took off and got flying around, got disoriented, and flew his plane into the ground. We just don't know. So the funniest explanation is the one the Ukrainians are offering, that it was blue on blue. They shot their own guy down. But based upon our track record with the Ukrainians, they are some of the most capable liars in the world, and they routinely do so.
Yeah, we had this Russian analyst in one of the Russian talk shows, Klintsevich. He was talking about that the situation between Russia and NATO is getting worse. Have you heard his comments? And he was talking about the number of forces in the Kursk region. He said between 12,000 to 20,000 soldiers. He said this activities on the part of the United States in the Persian Gulf is a threat to Russia. They're thinking of having some sort of escalation with Russia, attacking Russia, I don't know, with nuclear bombs, because they're capable of carrying nuclear bombs. He's talking about the U.S. aircraft carriers.
That's such nonsense. I mean, really. Yeah, I guess in theory, you can probably get the F-35s could carry, you put a nuke on them and off they'd go, but it's too far to fly, number one. Number two, the Russians, their air defense system, these are not stealth fighters. So, the threat from the Persian Gulf, I think he's way out on a limb. That has nothing to do with Russia. That has everything to do with trying to intimidate Iran. But the definitely tensions are up between NATO and the Russians. As I understand it, the Russians are bringing more and more forces into Kursk. Some people say, well, the Russians were caught with their pants down. The Russians were surprised. Okay, that all may be true. Maybe this is a massive screw-up. I don't know. But it doesn't matter. Just screw up or not, it does not change the course of this war where things are headed for Ukraine. Ukraine is dead. It's dead. It's still got signs. The breath is still coming, going in and out, but barely. But the vital organs are shutting down. And it just is now a matter of time before we see a complete and rapid collapse. We're already seeing the collapse of the military effort in the Donbas. The lines are crumbling very quickly. You know, Russia in the last 2 days captured like 7 different towns. Before they were lucky if they were capturing a town every 3 weeks. So the pace of the retreat on the part of the Ukrainians has accelerated. They're running away.
How many forces they have lost so far in the Kursk region? It's more than 7,000 soldiers.
Last number I just saw was 16,000 plus. So let's let's go with the big number. They put 30,000 in there. Well, if you got 16,000, that's still more than 50%. The problem the Ukrainians have right now is they're out in the open. They're not in dug in entrenched positions that have been built heavily bunkered and fortified with concrete. The one place they have taken refuge is a women's prison. I think those Ukrainian soldiers may have more to contend with dealing with women prisoners than they will with the Russian Spetsnaz units. But, you know, they're sitting ducks. They're trapped. They don't have anywhere to run, anywhere to go. And once you're in a fixed position, how do you get resupplied? Because, you know, if you're being attacked, you got to fire at, you're firing at your attacker. Well, you're using up ammunition. Every round that goes downrange, got to replace. Well, if you can't replace it, what do you do? You know, at some point, they're going to be throwing rocks or wooden pegs or something.
Yeah. It seems that whoever was the mastermind of this offensive on the Kursk region at this stage of war, we can consider him as the worst enemy of Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's some that have argued that Sirsky is a secret agent of Russia because his parents still live in Russia. He was with the Russian army, you know, went to Russian military academy. So maybe, you know, he's doing it. Now, on the other hand, the rumor's out that it's Sirsky that's going to Zelensky saying, I told you not to do this and you made us do this. So this is all on you. So who knows? The latest pictures, images we've seen of Zelensky, he looks a little desperate.
Do you think that in the latest, CNN was reporting that they're forcing, it seems that somebody in the Zelensky administration or even the European Union, they're forcing Washington to give the permission to Zelensky to hit Russia even deeper inside their territory. Do you think that if it comes from the European Union, we can consider United Kingdom behind this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would say almost certainly. Look, I don't know what this fixation with striking deeper into Russia. It's not like Ukraine or NATO, for that matter, is sitting on an unlimited supply of medium-range ballistic missiles that it could just launch and launch and launch and devastate Russia. Well, they've got limited amounts, number one. So when you're firing in limited amounts, you're going to do limited damage. And it's even questionable whether you'll be able to inflict any significant damage because of the air defense systems that Russia has deployed. But if you do inflict damage, you're just giving one more reason for Russia to want to kill you. They've got ample reasons already, but this will further... What it does is it further strengthens the argument of the military segment of Russian society about destroying not only Ukraine, but destroying NATO. You've got sort of the political element, according to John Helmer, that has been less bellicose, less quick to anger, wanting to look for some alternative means to instead of a total war. But their position's weakening as a result of things like Kursk and then if the strikes go deeper into Russia. I think it'd be insanity for the Biden administration to do it, but nobody's going to go to jail for calling them stupid because it's just a statement of fact.
And do you see, Larry, right now in the European Union, we had Macron just forcing, putting pressure on Serbia to sanction Russia. They said, no, we're not going to be part of this game.
Yeah.
How do you think that they would be able to pressure these countries who are not part of this coalition, part of this game against Russia? Because so far, we didn't see that Hungary, Slovakia, Serbia being part of why they're trying, putting pressure on these countries.
Well, because Serbia, Hungary, Slovakia, or I guess the Czech Republic, you know, some of them are not playing ball. They're not fully on Team Ukraine. And they're arguing for dealing with Russia. So, you know, that's it underscores that there is this rift within the European Union, and it's not getting any better. And it's going to get more extreme, more that the gulf between the two sides is going to widen, not narrow, in the coming weeks as the situation in Ukraine becomes more desperate. It is fascinating that countries like Poland and Germany are now saying, okay, but no, we're not sending any more money to Ukraine. You're on your own. I think they're worried about now they're going to have to handle all these refugees, and they'll have to handle it on their own.
Yeah. And have you seen J.D. Vance talking with Bill O'Reilly on his show? He's talking about the European Union should focus, should concentrate on Ukraine while the U.S. priority is China. Do you think that it would be the strategy on the part of the Trump administration if Trump wins?
Well, yeah, no, they're not going to. If more aid for Ukraine, forget about it. Ukraine will be done. Question will remain, how much activity will the CIA continue to have inside Ukraine? But again, Vance, I welcomed his addition to the ticket, but he's still a young guy with not a lot of education on some of the foreign policy matters. And this notion that we got to get ready to confront China. I mean, come on. The United States has just got to cut this shit out. We're looking to fight everybody. Hey, I'm going to fight you, and I'm going to fight you. And it's like, stop. You know, somebody sedate us and, you know, take the guns out of our hands, because we're dangerous. And we're absolutely dangerous to the world. And this notion that our only platform for viewing the world is an ideological platform based upon confrontation and declaring to someone an enemy. And it just, you know, once you construct this, I call it pseudo reality, that you have to look through it and say, yeah, those Chinese, man, they're trying to dominate the world. And you say, well, stop. How many foreign Chinese military bases are there? And how many American military bases are there? Oh, I see. China may have 5 in the world, and the United States has 600, or is it 800? It's a lot. Same thing for Russia. Hell, same thing for Iran. Iran is trying to spread influence through the Middle East, which is why we've got our troops illegally based in Syria, taking the Syrian oil and selling, you know, giving it to the Kurds. if this didn't involve so much death and destruction, it would be funny. It's so damn ridiculous. And the hypocrisy on it is just, it's overwhelming, and its odor, it stinks.
Yeah. Here, Ursula von der Leyen talking about the position of Europe in the conflict in Ukraine.
They don't argue for peace. They argue for appeasement and subjugation of Ukraine. So today I would like to address all those who, after 1,000 days of death and destruction, are asking sincerely, isn't it time for talks? It is first and foremost up to our Ukrainian friends to answer this question. We and them want the war to stop as soon as possible. But while many outside Europe are preoccupied only with the end of fighting, my position is that peace is not simply the absence of war. Peace is a settlement that makes war impossible and unnecessary. And therefore, We must put Ukraine in the condition of negotiating such peace. And this is why the integration of Ukraine in our European Union is for us at the heart of every peace effort.
Hey, all you got to do is put a little black mustache on her right there under her nose and color her hair black. Reminds me of somebody. Von der Hitler. Hey, I just, good God. You know, this is, the world is in trouble because we have morons like that in positions of authority. That's simple. And I guess I better never travel to Europe because I called her a moron and compared her with Hitler. But, this desire of the West to destroy Russia is real. And I keep, every chance I get, I say it to John Channels, what the Russians listen to. I'm warning them. There's no negotiation with the West. You know, I agree with von der Leyen on one thing. There is no negotiation. There's nothing to negotiate about. The only negotiation is the complete unconditional surrender of Ukraine and whether or not Ukraine will continue to actually exist as a country, whether it should exist as a country. No more NATO. NATO's encroachment upon Russia's border is going to stop. We're going to put a stop to it. Because we're Russia, from Russia's standpoint, they're not the ones that, they didn't invade Iraq twice. They didn't invade Syria. They didn't start wars with Libya. They haven't backed terrorism in Iran. They didn't go in and to Somalia. I mean, it's just the United States is a rapacious hegemon and likes to pretend that it's not an imperialistic power, but it is. And it's hell-bent on trying to control and dictate what others can do and can't do. And I think the rest of the world's getting pretty tired of our act and what we're doing.
Do you think that right now in the European Union, they're trying to convince German government to go after some sort of escalation, because without Germany, they're not capable of doing this, Larry. It doesn't matter what the United Kingdom is talking about, other countries are talking about, because Germany is so important. And I think one of the reasons that we have Ursula von der Leyen being part of this discussion is to convince Germans to think this way.
Yeah. Well, they're going to get smacked in the face on Sunday. There's an election in former East Germany that the early indications are it's going to be a complete repudiation of Olaf Scholz and von der Leyen and all of the pro-war footing that has been advocated by these crazy Greens.
Yeah. And shifting the gear, Larry, to the Sullivan's visit to China, people are talking about the main objective of this visit was to convince Chinese not to help Russia. We've seen this concept before in Olaf Scholz's visit, Janet Yellen's visit, Anthony Blinken's visit. They were trying to do this so far. Right now, Jake Sullivan, how did you find it?
I guess what I've learned is I don't think the Chinese have a hand gesture comparable to someone inserting their middle finger into the air, because that's essentially what the Chinese told Jake Sullivan, They do it very politely, and they do it in diplomatic language. But, China's not going to give in to the United States on this. This really is reminiscent of a bunch of 14-year-old girls in middle school. Hey, don't like Betty. Don't talk to Betty over here. Yeah, let's just get our little group over here and keep Betty away. And then the new girl shows up. Hey, don't talk to Betty. But I like Betty. Oh, and that, you know, but except we're doing it with nukes. And we do it with guns and ammunition. And we do it with trade where, you know, we cause people to die of starvation and that kind of. So it is, it's not cute and it's not funny. And the United States is reneging on, violating the very agreement Richard Nixon reached with Mao Zedong back in 1972, or his Zhou Enlai, was it, the successor? 1972, United States says, okay, we recognize the one China policy, that Taiwan is part of China. But then that's why we stopped putting an embassy with an ambassador there. They, you know, we came up with something cosmetic. It's still under foreign service. But we at least paid lip service to what we agreed to with the Chinese. Now the Chinese are watching American actions and American language and verbal threats. And they go, wait a second. You know, then they're watching what they do, what we're doing in Ukraine. And recognizing they could be next. You know, we always talk about the Uyghurs. What the China's doing to the Uyghurs. Chinese can turn around and say, you know, go F yourself. Worry about what you did to the Sioux. Worry about what you did to the Cherokee. You know, don't come lecturing us about upholding human rights that you yourselves don't even respect, you don't acknowledge, and you ignore. Oh, yeah, you also had laws that were anti-Chinese and made them work almost as slaves building your railroads. China, yeah, we haven't forgotten that either. So, you know, Sullivan's can go over and tell the Chinese, here's what we want you to do. You know, if you want to be our friend, you can't be friends with Russia. Stop.
Yeah. It's not only Ukraine that makes the differences between China and the United States. Even in the Middle East, they have their differences. China was trying to make some sort of negotiation. The United States is not considering any sort of negotiations because they're not putting pressure on Netanyahu and his administration.
Right.
It doesn't matter what they're talking about, but the outcome of their action doesn't mean that they want some sort of negotiations. Which it means that they're totally disconnected right now, China and the United States.
Well, how can they be connected? I mean, yes, the United States is dependent in some critical areas on China for items that they manufacture, in pharmaceuticals in particular, some critical rare earth minerals, some other mechanical items that are essential components in U.S. defense products. And yet, in spite of all of that, the United States continues to insult the Chinese, continues to try to patronize, treat the Chinese like their children, to lecture them, and to conduct military operations in and around the Chinese territory. You know, I understand why we do that, but I can look back, look from the shoes or the point of view of Chinese or anyone else and going, who the hell do these Americans think they are? That they can just come sail here and then declare this theirs and that they have a right to anything here? No. This is our territorial waters. This is our neighborhood. We're going to kick the United States out, which is starting to happen, actually. U.S. just hasn't awakened to it.
Larry, how do you see the situation in the West Bank that it seems the Netanyahu administration is trying to intensify the attacks on this part?
Yeah. Well, they want to exterminate the Palestinians, period. They'll do it one of two ways. Make conditions there so dangerous, so uncomfortable, so impossible to live with that people will flee. They'll go to Jordan or go someplace else. Or they'll die. The Zionists don't care. They just want them gone. It's their land. God gave this land to them, don't you know? It's in the Bible. That's how they view it. That's how, unfortunately, many Christians view it too. That the Palestinians, you know, and to put it in sort of theological terms, they only apply parts of their ancient scripture to the current situation. Because the Palestinians, if you will, are descendants of Abraham as well. And maybe through the lineage of Jacob. Well, they're relatives. And you're trying to paint a picture of this loving God, but he only loves one kid, hates the other. Come on. I mean, it's silly to base policy on how you actually treat human beings on that, but that's what they're doing. So yeah, they're gonna escalate this, and the war in the West Bank may actually break out on a much bigger scale than what we've seen in Gaza. Much bigger area to cover, and Hezbollah is not going to stop letting up pressure as well from the north.
Yeah. Larry, I've seen that you've written an article on your website, sonar21.com, and you've been mentioning this article in that piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you elaborate on this piece that you wrote?
Well, I didn't write that. That piece is written by, if I recall, Itzhak Barik, a reserve general. So he's a guy in his mid-70s. Who fought in the Yom Kippur War, 73 war. And, he said that if Israel keeps doing what it's doing now, it will collapse. It will fall apart. You're already seeing the unity within the government fray and fracture. Then you've got the economic problems. And it's really, that's where it gets real interesting. Because on the one hand, all the superficial elements that you'd look for to indicate does it have economic strength or not, seem to say, man, Israel's doing pretty good. They got a very low unemployment rate. Well, the reason they have a low unemployment rate is people, A, have been leaving the country, they're in the army, there's nobody around to hire, and several of the businesses that have gone out, in other words, you're not facing a situation where there's growth and there's new jobs being put out every day and people can flock to them and incomes are going up. It's just the opposite. So the number of bankruptcies is increased, investment slowing down, the borrowing has accelerated, they borrowed there's a lot more, which is going to add to inflation. So you got the economic problems. You've got there's no longer an agreement about who's an Israeli. So that's you got the Israelis and the Zionists. The Israelis tend to be, I call them Israelis, the secular types. They, in theory, think they can get along with the Palestinians, and they would employ Palestinians. The Zionists, on the other hand, they don't want to have anything to do with the Palestinians. They want them to die. They want to take their land, take their homes. And they have no regard for them. And they don't even want to be physically around them. They act like the southern white guy in Mississippi did back in 1950, sitting next to a black man. Ooh, get away, you know, you're unclean. Go sit over there in the colored only section. That's what these ultra-nationalist Zionists, that's what they're all about.
Isn't the Netanyahu administration considering any sort of expertise coming from like this 77-year-old general? He's talking about that Israel is not able to continue this war of attrition against Hamas and Hezbollah. and not in Likud party, we other parties, anybody who has a chance to win after Netanyahu and his administration, do we have any sort of understanding in the elites of Israel?
No. Oh, well, a few. You know, you've got there's pushback, opposition coming from the Israeli Defense Force leadership. Defense Minister Gallant starting to push back a little bit. You've had the heads of Mossad and Shin Bet, the two. Mossad deals with external intelligence. Shin Bet deals with internal, and you know they're both saying, "Hey, you got to negotiate with Hamas." So you've got that fracturing at the top among those key institutions. But still, a majority of the voters, from what I've seen in the newspapers, support Netanyahu, or at least his policies. Without, they may not like him personally, but they support his policies.
Yeah. And Larry, just to wrap up this session, I want to talk about a bigger picture of the United States, of the foreign policy of the United States right now. We have two options, Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. It doesn't seem that when it comes to the foreign policy of the United States, we're going to have any drastic change. And the key element would be what Antony Blinken has said recently. He said that one of the reporters asked him why we were not able to bring Russia to its knees by the sanctions, by the conflict in Ukraine. He said something so impressive, something so amazing, that the world is changing. And we have to study this new world. And I think he was talking about BRICS and these new institutions. But at the end of the day, when it comes to their practice, how they want to implement their policy, you see the total ignorance of what he was talking about, at least in that conference, in that press conference. And you see that they're getting back to their default setting, that they say that we can put pressure on each and everybody. They have to consider what we are talking about. They have to accept our rhetoric.
Well, the basic principles that you learned as a child, or were supposed to learn, if you're going to be I'm not talking about a raving asshole, but somebody who's normal, is to treat others like you want to be treated. Very simple concept. Concept that is rarely applied in international and foreign policy affairs, especially by the United States. That there is no empathy to understand why the other side is doing what they're doing. Doesn't mean that you're sitting there trying to excuse it. It's like, while I disagree strongly with President Lula by his actions against Twitter, you know, the ex-Twitter, still, that's a Brazilian thing. It's a Brazilian decision. And if he, you know, you got to step back and say, you know, that's not how I do it, but that's what they're going to do. We have to live in this world together. And so, there are going to be friction points. Find a way to put those friction points to the side or de-escalate them. The U.S., maybe Blinken's starting to recognize that we're entering a brave new world that we won't control, but I think he's one of the few. The United States is headed to a fall of, I almost say catastrophic proportions. The United States may very well experience what happened to the Soviet Union when the Soviet Union came to an end and Russia emerged. If we have a collapse of our currency and a collapse of our economy, then all of a sudden people are going to be scrambling around trying to put lives back together, and it can get real ugly. But it's out of that that you get reborn and looking at the transformation that's taken place in Russia over the last 30 years. In the 1990s, it was a veritable hellhole. But now, it's kind of cities that you remember what New York City or Detroit used to be in the 1940s or 50s, when something that everybody wanted to see, wanted to go to. It was considered modern and at the time. Not now. You get deluged with homeless people in Washington, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco. Name the major city. You don't see that in Russia. So the world, world's changing, and more countries are paying attention to China and Russia and not to the United States, including countries like Thailand. They're moving in their own direction.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
You have a great weekend.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you over the weekend.
Talk to you.
Okay. Bye.